Thank you for joining us to review our results for the year ended March 31, 2017. I'm joined by Matthew Gregory, our Chief Financial Officer, who, following these introductory remarks, will take you through a review of the numbers. After that, I'll provide a brief commentary on each division, and then we'll answer any questions. I cannot turn to the results before reiterating our profound sadness over the Croydon tram derailment in November, however. The investigations are ongoing, and we continue to assist in any way we can. We're all very proud of the safety culture and record at First Group, but an incident such as this shakes everyone to the very core, and we're very sorry for all those affected. Now, we're pleased to have achieved our overall financial goals this year in delivering significant improvement in operating results and cash generation. These results are anchored by strong margin performance in our North American divisions, more than offsetting challenging trading conditions for rail and bus in the UK. We continue to drive financial performance that is sustainable, particularly with regard to cash generation, and that involves maintaining disciplined bidding in our contract businesses, student, transit, and rail. The idea of sustainability also drives our investment, because we must present information and services to our customers, employing the technology on which they rely for making decisions if we are to retain our market-leading positions. This past year was a year of delivery for a number of exciting new technologies, and we look forward to demonstrating their impact in the future. We still face significant challenges experienced by others in the sectors in which we operate, but we face them from a new position of stability and capability far greater than we have enjoyed in recent years. With that, I'll turn it over to Matthew.
Thanks, Tim. Morning, everybody. I'm going to take you through the numbers for the year and give you a bit more color on the headlines. So starting with the headlines, as Tim mentioned, our operating profit was ahead of recent expectations at £339 million, 13% up on last year. This strong performance was driven by the improvement in our student business, which hit margins of 9.6%, 250 basis points ahead of last year. This performance, along with currency tailwinds, outweighed the more challenging trading conditions in our UK businesses. On the cash front, we came in ahead of expectations with an inflow of £147 million. Whilst the result did benefit from a large property sale, we still delivered in excess of £100 million this year, a very pleasing performance. Net debt was reduced to £1.3 billion, and as a result of our strong cash generation, leverage has reduced to 1.9 times net debt to EBITDA. Return on capital employed continues to be a key focus for us. On a constant currency basis, return on capital employed grew by 60 basis points, continuing our forward momentum in this area. So, a little bit more detail now on the financial results. Reported revenue for the year was up 8% as a result of the strengthening in the US dollar. On a constant currency basis, revenue was broadly flat, and I'll go into a bit more detail on this on the next slide. Adjusted operating profit was up 13% on a reported basis. And as we discussed at the half year, our business has seen a net positive impact from the strengthening of the US dollar. The translation impact of that movement improved operating profit by £31 million. However, this is offset by the transactional FX cost of £20 million as a result of the higher cost of fuel arising from the weaker sterling. After adjusting for that FX impact, operating profit grew by 9%, and the margin grew by 50 basis points, driven by the stronger performance in students. With a relatively fixed debt structure, the interest cost was largely flat on last year, and in line with the increasing weighting of profitability towards North America, the tax rate increased by 300 basis points to 26%, and I'll go into more detail on this in a moment. Attributable profit after tax, interest and non-controlling interest grew by 21%, and this flowed through to a 20% increase in EPS. So let me talk you through the divisional performance, looking at revenue first. And as usual, we put detailed bridges in the back of the pack, but let me give you the key highlights. Reported revenue is up 8%, but on a constant currency basis, revenue is broadly flat, in effect down half a percent. Student was down 0.4% in constant currency, with the positive benefits of our contract pricing strategy and additional operating days offset by contracts not renewed and more days lost to weather than last year. We continue to be pleased by our contract pricing discipline, with retention rates in line with expectations at 80% and price increases on at-risk contracts up 7.3%. This is a good performance, but having completed the third year of our more disciplined strategy, we expect pricing to moderate going forward. The transit business returned to growth this year, with 4% constant currency growth, and this is despite a continued low level of activity in the Canada oil sands business, which declined by 14% in the year. Growth was driven by 19 new contracts, particularly in paratransit, call centre and transit management, And we also saw our first contract win in light rail this year in Denton, Texas. Moving to Greyhound, this continues to be affected by low oil prices, pushing customers back into their cars and driving down pricing on competing airline routes. However, we're increasingly seeing the benefit from our investment in up-to-date revenue management and sales systems. This is evidenced by the 1% growth of like-for-like revenue in the second half compared to the 4% decline in the first half. And this momentum has continued into the first month of the new year. And as you'd expect, our Greyhound Express business continues to outperform the rest of the Greyhound business and the market with growth of 1.3% for the year. Turning to the UK, trading in First Bus continues to be difficult with total revenue down 1.4% for the year. And the business continues to be affected by declining revenue driven by a combination of reduced high street footfall, lower fuel prices supporting a modal shift to cars, and also congestion. But we continue to see a wide variation of performance across the country, with revenue affected by very local issues. And whilst trading continues to be difficult, we're pleased to note a moderation in the run rate, with the second half showing consistent like-for-like performance on prior year versus a decline of 1.3% in the first half. In First Rail, headline revenue has reduced due to the rebasing of the TPE contract and its move from a subsidy to a premium franchise. And on a like-for-like basis, passenger revenue grew by 1.3% in the year. First Rail is affected by the industry-wide slowdown in growth. Although TPE is outperforming the market, Great Western has been disproportionately impacted by the high levels of engineering works experienced across the route, and revenue performance remains challenging into the current year. So having reviewed the revenue performance, I'll now move on to the operating performance. Overall, the group increased operating profit by 13%, and as commented previously, after taking account all of the FX impacts, the group increased operating profit by 9% and 50 basis points of margin. The strongest performance came from student, which did, as we said it would, exceed 9%. And in fact, the business hit 9.6%, improving dollar margins by 250 basis points. Again, we put the detailed bridges into the back of the presentation, but the improvement was driven by the impact of our contract pricing strategy, lower fuel costs as hedges rolled off, as well as cost savings. And this year, we drove $26 million of additional cost savings through an organizational restructure, as well as renewed activity around driver cost efficiency. And this means we've significantly exceeded our three-year target of $50 million of savings that we announced a couple of years ago. You'll note we're not majoring on driver shortages this year in our commentary. This doesn't mean that the problem's gone away or been fixed, just that now that we're better placed to handle the issue in a more coordinated and vigorous manner, as well as recovering this through pricing. Turning on to transit, the business returned to growth this year, both at revenue and operating profit level. Margins were in line with our medium-term expectations at 7%. You'll recall at the half year that the position was slightly lower than this due to a number of difficult contracts. And the team has worked very hard to turn this around and have been able to reverse this negative impact. And moving forward, we expect transit to maintain its position, with the loss of a couple of large lower profit contracts offsetting further growth in the business. Moving on to Greyhound, you can see that despite an overall decline in the revenue, the business has acted positively to continue to reduce its cost base. And as a result, margins and profits are slightly up. While most of the business's focus has been on improving the customer experience, both digitally and at its terminals, the team continues to reduce mileage and take costs out. Trading in Canada remains problematic, and whilst we continue to reduce the loss experienced by this business, structural impediments hamper our ability to reduce the drag as quickly as we would like. Turning now to First Bus, this business continues to be challenging and requires further management action. The business has suffered this year with an £11 million hit to profit, driven from the strengthening of the US dollar. Despite continued programs to take costs out of the business, which generated £14 million of cost savings this year, this was insufficient to offset the cost of inflation and the decline in revenue. And as a result, margins declined to 4.3%, down 170 basis points. As noted at the half year, we've reviewed our cost saving program in light of the continued trading challenge and have identified further efficiency plans. As you know, we can't be overly specific in this forum, but would comment that depots have been closed at the end of the year in Yorkshire and Manchester, and further efficiencies have been sought from the divisional structure. And this is in addition to improving profitability through network reorganization and rationalization. And finally, onto UK Rail. As previously explained, margins have trended downwards as they move towards industry averages. And this is as a consequence of the new TPE franchise and also the slower growth rates in Great Western. Given the pressure on revenue growth and continued engineering possessions on Great Western, we're expecting margins in our existing franchise to continue to moderate. So to conclude, overall, a good profit performance from the business with margin growth of 50 basis points after all foreign exchange impacts. Having looked at operating profit, I'd now like to take you through the bottom half of the P&L. Interest costs are largely in line with last year. As you know, a significant portion of our interest costs are fixed from our bonds, but we're still seeking to be disciplined with our cash to reduce the variable portion as much as possible. We did make savings here, but this was offset by a £5 million FX impact from retranslating our US dollar-denominated interest. And going forward into 2017-18, we're expecting interest to continue to fall marginally, with no refinancing activity assumed in this financial year. The effective tax rate rose 300 basis points in the year to 26%, with the tax effect of stronger US performance mitigated by the resolution of certain tax claims in North America. As we've consistently flagged, our ETR will increase significantly, driven by the higher proportion of profit earned in North America. And the guidance for the coming year is an ETR of between 30 to 32%. However, I would remind you that we continue to benefit from historic tax losses, and so the cash tax paid remains extremely low at £10 million, and I expect this to rise by about £5 million next year. Non-controlling interest costs reduce this year as we seek to wrap up the previous non-controlling interest related to the old TPE franchise. I take the opportunity to remind you that there'll be a non-controlling interest in the 17-18 year, with MTR's 30% interest in Southwest Rail coming into effect. And taking all of this into account, the EPS rose by 20% for the year. As a final point, there are a number of non-trading items that we pulled out separately to better clarify the performance of each of the divisions. Other than the usual amortization of intangibles, the net number is very small and is a positive. We've seen a £22 million one-off gain as a result of the sale of Greyhound's San Jose site, and this has been offset by £17 million of restructuring costs within the business. Of this, the vast majority, £11 million, has come from restructuring within First Bus. And we'd expect there to be further charges in the coming year as we seek to reduce the bus cost base further. Before looking at overall cash flow, I'd like to spend some time looking at capital expenditure. We've continued to invest in the business during the year, and the spend is heavily weighted towards our fleet as well as our continued Greyhound transformation project. Cash capex spend for the year, excluding the rail business, or as we now refer to it, the road business, is £324 million, approximately £25 million below last year. This is in line with expectations from last year and reflects continued tight capital management and efficient cascading of older buses. The lower spend this year is also a reflection of the level of retention, which at 80% was lower than last year. The focus remains on capital allocation, ensuring we drive appropriate growth and returns from the invested capital. The student business continues to consume the most capital, and we expect the spend to increase slightly next year as retention rates rise. Capex in First Bus will fall as we take back control of our spend, post-DDA compliance, and Greyhound recommences investment in its buses. Overall, we expect cash capex from our road divisions to be in line with last year. As you know, we exclude rail in this discussion since this cost is largely funded, so is cash net neutral over time, and can move significantly dependent on bid commitments, new projects, and also timing. You'll recall that we flagged higher spend in rail last year, which due to timing did not arise. But as a result of continued depot redevelopment and station improvements, we expect rail gross capex to be significantly higher. And although these will be largely cash neutral, you could see in excess of £100 million of funded capex in addition from this division. Clearly, as ever with rail, this is subject to the timing of significant projects. So let me turn to the cash flow and walk you through the performance for the year. Overall, net cash inflow was £147 million, £111 million better than last year, a very pleasing performance. Operating cash flow of £301 million was generated, a conversion rate of 89%, up from 64% last year. And as you can see, the bulk of our operating cash flow is generated by the EBITDA less capex. The operating cash flow has benefited by around £23 million from the San Jose sale, and there has been minimal change from our insurance provision movement and working capital. Pension contributions in excess of the P&L charge and interest and tax reduces cash generation to an inflow of £147 million. This performance and the basis behind it is very much in line with what we set out last year. And looking forward, and taking into account capital requirements and trading performance, we continue to see the business being able to generate substantial cash in the coming year. This is before we benefit from the sizable cash inflow that will arise when we take on the Southwest Rail franchise. And we have increasing confidence that the business will be able to generate sustainable cash flow. Overall, our financial position has improved this year and remains strong, with our headroom under our committed facilities and free cash at around £1 billion. And as I mentioned earlier, net debt to EBITDA ratio fell from 2.3 times to 1.9 times. The long-term debt program remains in place, and average debt maturity has logically fallen to 3.6 years. And the rating agencies, Standard & Poor's and Fitch, currently have us at BBB- and stable, and the standard process is to review this shortly after the year-end. Our revolving credit facility was extended by 2 years during March and now expires in July 2021. And we were pleased that our financing group supported this extension, was largely kept intact, and agreed to marginally improved rates. During the year, we repaid $50 million of private placement notes that fell due in October 2016, and we will pay off the remaining $100 million during this financial year. We'll continue to apply discipline to cash and borrowing to minimize our interest charge, and for guidance purposes, you can assume that cash interest will remain broadly unchanged for 17-18. But as we improve our forecasting, I'd expect the Treasury team to do a bit better than that. We will continue to monitor and assess any opportunity to further optimize our financing structure and costs, but there are unlikely to be any significant movements until the bonds start to mature. And as a final point, you'll note that the pension deficit's increased from £270 million to £360 million. However, this is a lot better than the half-year position due to the movement in the UK discount rate, and we continue to apply a multitude of liability reduction plans to our pensions and manage our cash contributions through dialogue with the trustees. So before I close and pass back to Tim, I thought it would be helpful to document some of the guidance that we've peppered through the results. Trading continues to be mixed, with steady progress in the US, but continued economic uncertainty in the UK. And the road divisions will continue to progress, but rail, with the current economic challenges, will see margins moderate. We will continue to generate free cash after disciplined investment to support the customer and community needs, and road cash capital will be approximately £330 million. Interest remains flat, and tax increases to 30 to 32%, and cash tax increases only marginally. South West Rail will be included from the end of August. Ownership is 70-30 with MTR, and so a non-controlling interest will be recorded. And due to the high level of season tickets on this commuter line, the working capital inflow is likely to be high at around £90 million. And this financial year has a 53rd week for the road divisions, which will impact operating profit by around 2%. So let me close with a summary. Despite a year of upheaval and change, this has been a strong year for the group. Revenues have stabilised, margins have grown, and cash has been delivered. And whilst there will continue to be challenges, we have a robust financial position, strong market positions, and a proven ability to generate cash. We still have cost improvements to be made, but the business can now start to focus more on generating top-line growth by delivering solutions to our customers. And with that, I'll hand back to Tim.
Thank you, Matthew. Let me provide some commentary on each of our divisions, including some indication of immediate points of focus. As is plain from our numbers, student led our results this year. The magnitude of the improvement over the prior year is even greater when one considers the continuing driver shortages that student and all transport operators face in North America. While we have managed the costs from driver shortages much more effectively this past year, the absolute challenge in the labor market is unchanged. This meant we had to do a lot of other things right. We started with the hardwired savings that we reviewed with you last year at this time, which involved changing the management structure. Notwithstanding those reductions, we were able to improve the consistency across the student map of employing efficient practices. We not only have more locations doing the right things every day, but we have the tools that allow that create transparency with regard to what they are doing. So much of student success has been sown over recent years of driving consistency across the portfolio. But this past year, the efforts came together and are now a permanent part of management's practices and procedures. A major contributor to driving consistency and an example of leveraging the strength of the group is that this past year, Transit managed students' maintenance practices. This turned a perennial budget challenge into a steady contributor to unbudgeted efficiencies. The third year of our pricing strategy provided the cumulative impact that has delivered a much healthier portfolio. There are still a handful of markets that are to be dealt with, and there will always be challenges as school districts make changes that affect the economics of a particular contract. But the portfolio is now generating the results you see and is in a position to do so on an ongoing basis. In the current year, we are maintaining the game plan that got us to this point. Disciplined pricing, uniform application of best practice, and transparency of performance at the local level. We expect retention rates to start to edge higher as we complete the repricing of the portfolio and as we roll out technology and improvements in relationship management that we think will create even greater customer loyalty. For example, we've completed beta testing on an app we shall be rolling out in the new school year that will give real-time bus location and arrival information while providing push notifications to caregivers and administrators. A number of companies have advertised such apps, but this is the first one with this level of accuracy and real-time information. As we solidify our preferred position in the market, we will remain alert to growth opportunities, whether as a result of conversions or possible bolt-on acquisitions. But management's focus remains on driving efficiencies and improving our existing portfolio. Turning to transit, as Matthew said, the team delivered what is almost taken for granted, growth while maintaining margin. The performance shouldn't be taken for granted, however, because it was delivered only with enormous energy and professional skill. Transit has been under pressure from driver shortages and the impact of changes in the energy sector, just as other divisions have, but continues to find a way through. Growth opportunities were disappointing in some of our traditional markets, and transit colleagues countered with growth in adjacent markets and new sectors and geographies. U.S. Rail and Panama are both good examples. Transit was able to sustain its margin performance in the face of losing high-margin oil field shuttle business by driving efficiencies through the portfolio. Going forward, we shall continue to explore new markets, but we are also adapting to the changes in our existing markets. That acceptance of change embraces everything from the still theoretical, such as our autonomous shuttle that is running out in Costa County, California, to the more immediate mobility solutions we've proposed in partnership with on-demand companies such as Lyft to provide next-generation paratransit service. With transit, I'm tempted to say it's just going to be more of the same, but more of the same means new developments almost every period. The results may be consistent, but the character of the business is constantly changing, and we are determined to change with it. Greyhound also demonstrated dogged consistency in its performance, continuing its display of cost variability in the face of challenging market conditions. The combination of the power of the network, disciplined operations, and the rollout of new commercial tools allowed Greyhound to eke out margin improvement on disappointing revenues. We are proud of the team's ability to deliver their commercial transformation program to time and budget, and of their outperformance compared to the competition in the critical point-to-point high-volume corridors. Greyhound has been transformed, and it will continue to roll out further improvements this year, but it has been difficult to change the market as we had hoped. Low oil prices continue to buoy private car mileage and to sustain budget airlines in many of our traditional strong city pairs. The good news is that the path-breaking work Greyhound has done in bringing modern retail solutions into a traditional transport business is paying dividends across the group. The business intelligence that flows from GPS-driven systems, yield pricing, and advanced mobile customer communications can be seen in each of our businesses. In the meantime, we are encouraged that more recent periods indicate a more stable market, and Greyhound will continue to improve its offering to the public, this year introducing bus-side scanning of electronic tickets, a personalized customer loyalty program, and further expansion in Mexico. Turning to operations in the UK, we face a less bullish outlook. First Bus suffers the same difficult market conditions you see across the industry. Buses face a mix of congestion, high street retail reductions, and funding cuts. Moreover, while currency changes have been a tailwind for First Group as a whole, they've penalized First Bus's margin because its fuel is priced in U.S. dollars. Matthew has described the steps we have taken and are taking to establish a sustainable portfolio of businesses. But we continue to face the trade-off between shortening the time required to improve the margin for the whole business and preserving the magnitude of the upside. We are encouraged that the business is again generating growth in fare-paying passengers in recent periods, although concessionary volumes have declined. First Bus is continuing to improve its offering, largely benefiting from the commercial innovation across the group, which has allowed it to introduce mobile and smart ticketing broadly across the portfolio, and a new bus app that uses Google Maps to present complete travel information in plain language. I think from here on the story gets simpler. All innovation must be judged by whether it makes using our buses simpler for the traveling public. And with the Bus Services Act, our investment decisions get simpler as we see which of our local partners are determined to create an environment where local bus networks can thrive. The story for First Rail is not simple, however, because it does include the short-term concerns Matthew reviewed with you regarding the need to account for adjustments that reflect engineering works on GWR, remapping of TPE, and other issues such as the risks associated with the Southwestern startup. And while I'm certainly in favor of getting the models right and not getting ahead of ourselves, I want to balance our presentation by noting why rail is a good long-term story for First Group. Starting with GWR, we have been frustrated by the effect of engineering work on our growth rates. Our customers know a better railway is coming, and we do not want them to wait any longer than necessary or for them to turn to other modes. But the fact is, we received the second direct award because we are best equipped to help the public through this period of disruption, and we are compensated for much of it. I agree that's no way to build a business, and claims are always subject to uncertainty in timing and quantum, but we are excited to lead the public through to the new Great Western Railway. Similarly, we recognize that we've taken on a challenge in moving TPE from a subsidy to a premium talk, but we are outperforming the industry in growth now on TPE, which provides some indication of the pent-up demand in the market. And when new trains arrive and TPE becomes a proper intercity franchise for the North, we believe will generate value throughout the term of the franchise. I'm also excited to see Hull Trains shoot the lights out in the industry NPS scores, which has led to us turning a break-even operation into a steady generator of profits, and we can't wait to take that entrepreneurial approach and apply it to the East Coast. Finally, we believe our award of the Southwestern franchise could be a watershed moment for the industry for a couple of reasons. First, the terms of the Southwestern franchise are a marked improvement over any the DST offered in prior competitions, and if a template for the future can create a more stable environment. The PCS is set at a more sensible level, and there is protection against exogenous risks. Second, the bidding for Southwestern Rail indicates that the market may now be reflecting the proper balance between price and risk. And finally, in that competition, the government gave greater weight to quality, which, if followed in future franchises, will result in better service for customers and a more stable industry. The DFT's new approach is encouraging, and we are looking forward to presenting a great offer for the East Midlands and West Coast franchises in partnership with Trenitalia. And in the meantime, we remain focused on a successful transition of Southwestern. Now to summarize, we have delivered the improvement in operating results and cash flow that we set out to deliver. I think you can see a consistent approach across our portfolio of businesses. Responsible investing to ensure a state of good repair, disciplined commercial decisions that balance risk and reward, and a willingness to change traditional businesses to adapt to a changing world. We still face big challenges. First Bus has to continue its recovery in an industry that is facing an uphill struggle. Greyhound is yet to break out on the top line. And rail, though the source of much good news, must deal with short-term uncertainties. But as I said in the beginning, we face such challenges and others from a position of stability and capability that did not previously exist, and the management is focused on continuing this progress. With that, we would be happy to take any of your questions.
Hi there, it's Sam Bland from JP Morgan. A couple, please. Just firstly on, maybe we'll go for bus trends. I mean, you're seeing revenue pick up a little bit through the year, but it sounds as if you're not getting too carried away on profitability expectations going forwards. Maybe talk a little bit about how the sort of cost inflation versus revenue growth is trending and what that looks like going forwards. And then secondly, clearly you're generating cash, but because of the timing of refinancing opportunities, that's being a little bit inefficient use of cash in the short term. Maybe talk a little bit about your sort of relative preference for bringing the dividend, you're reintroducing the dividend earlier, just letting the cash pile build up and then having a bigger refinancing later on. And then also you mentioned M&A, you know, it's sort of relative preference between those three. Thanks.
Shall I take on the first one there? Talking about bus, so in terms of the revenue trends, you know, we're seeing that still sort of flat to marginally growing, obviously off a lower base. We're seeing cost inflation, particularly around the labour, it's got to be at the 2% type range. So what that means is we're having to do a lot more around the more structural cost savings, so whether that's through procurement, whether it's through efficiency in some of our sort of more divisional and central areas, or whether it's sort of looking at the structure in some of the other, some of the operational parts of the business. So I would say that, you know, there continues to be pressure from inflation, the revenue isn't growing significantly, and so the focus is all around cost. I suppose moving on to the cash point, you're right, it is a slightly inefficient position within the balance sheet. I think we look at this a lot. There are a number of sources for that cash. At the moment, our preference is to leave that within the balance sheet, have that flexibility, have that, you know, theoretical leverage reduction and continue to monitor the position as we go forward. I think on the M&A side, we're talking about sort of small bolt-ons, particularly in the North American business. So I don't think that will necessarily, we're not looking at that as a huge sort of use of our cash. It's something that we feel as we now turn towards growth. It's just a logical extension to the opportunities for growth in our student business. So, these are all logical, relatively small bolt-ons that we'd start considering.
Yeah, I think all we're signaling is not that the cash would go to M&A. Mm. They're not really related that way. It's more that at these margin levels, obviously top-line growth becomes more relevant. Where the student business was, why would you be rushing out to buy things till you fix what you had? And now we're in a position where it makes a lot more sense to, over time, put more emphasis on that, and we think it will grow. I mean, retention rates will improve, and we'll, where we can see opportunities where we can deliver the better management systems we now have in place and can strengthen the portfolio, we'll look at those. But I don't, those are not sizable deals. Those are opportunistic ones.
Damian Brewer from RBC. Can I ask three questions, please? First of all, just on slide 40 on the pensions, obviously the cash versus income statement difference has expanded from about 12 million 2 years ago to 38 million. Could you give us some feel about how and when the two will come more into line with each other in what you're seeing? Secondly, on rail, 99 million of EBITDA last year, CapEx over 100 going forward. Could you give us some idea of what the profile of the CapEx looks like after 2018? I'd imagine that comes down considerably once you're past the sort of the bulge of the front-end loaded bid commitments. If you give us some idea of that, that would be great. And then very finally, a more high-level question. How often has the First Group board thought about whether the company is in the right shape at the moment, or whether it'd be better for shareholders to think about some kind of demerger or split, particularly with regards to the student business? Thank you.
First, I'll take the third.
Yeah, can you do the third so I can just quickly look at the page 40?
All right, I'll start on the third one. I think any business that has a divisional structure, this is a perennial question, and we look at it all the time. We look at what will create best value. All of our divisions have market-leading positions. All of our divisions benefit from working with each other. I think that what didn't exist 4 years ago does exist now, and that is that we readily and immediately move technology around the group, and the just the time to get through proof of concept has accelerated dramatically as a result of the Greyhound app work immediately being transferred over to First Rail and First Bus. So we definitely do see synergies. We definitely benefit from it. We definitely, in competition and going into new markets, are able to present ourselves with having the range of experience and the scale of an SNCF or any of these other great big transportation conglomerates, which convinces people like in Panama and like in California to say, all right, this is a company that really can deliver transport service by any mode under any contract structure and has done it many times before. So there's great advantages we see in our current configuration. However, we think it is, and the board thinks it is, an obligation to continually revisit every single piece and to see whether or not it is in the right shape and whether changes should be made. And as of right now, we continue to believe that the current structure makes sense and we derive value from it.
So moving back to the question about the pensions, I think actually the comparison is slightly different, Damien. So if you go back to 2015, this is when we had different accounting for the rail P&L. So I think if you exclude the rail element, which we're accounting for very much on the P&L cost is the cash cost, the differences are much more comparable. What I would say is that, so if you look at the difference between the cash contributions and the P&L charge for this year, you've got around a £40 million differential. I don't see that differential particularly reducing. It may increase slightly as we continue to address the deficit situations we have in our UK and US businesses. So I wouldn't see any significant change, just a slight increase in the cash contributions. Obviously, the P&L charge is all dependent on what happens with discount rates and all the asset returns and all those kind of things, so we can't really control that. But don't expect any reduction there. Moving back to rail capex, yeah, I mean, you're right. Logically, that should come through as these projects get completed, particularly on the Great Western business. So you would expect those to fall significantly over the next couple of years. We do have some projects coming through on South West Rail as we do some of the station redevelopment. So it's probably going to be sort of more like the 50-odd million pounds, but we can confirm that afterwards. I think the thing we've got to remember here is we keep flagging these things up because regions and authorities and the government are working on new things that come up that they want to look at. So that's why we're only flagging up because it sort of can be a headline gross capex number. A big chunk of these things are being funded by local authorities, so they're coming up with the cash, they're coming up with a lot of the ideas in conjunction with our teams. So it's a little bit difficult to forecast that. But you're right, I would expect the number to come down and should at least half, I would have thought. We'll confirm that later. We'll get into a bit more of the detail later on.
Morning, it's Joe Thomas from HSBC. Just continuing with the CapEx theme, we strip out rail. What's your view on the long-term multiple of maintenance CapEx or depreciation? And at what point do you expect to be returning to such levels if you're below them at the moment? Second thing, on school buses, you've flagged 16 million of savings this year. If you could just clarify, is that the amount that's hit the bottom line this year, or is it sort of an annualised number, sort of run rate by the year end? And what's the scope for any further cost savings coming out of the US? And then finally, the transit, the H2 margin number in transit looks very strong. I mean, you said that you've done better than you expected at the half year. It's not entirely clear to me reading the statement what has driven that. Can you perhaps give a little bit more clarity and tell us what your longer-term outlook for that transit margin is?
Sure.
Well, the CapEx, we've always said that, you know, around the 1.2 times is what your CapEx relative to depreciation is going to be. And we think that we'll stick to that general measure. It obviously changes based on market conditions. So, for example, over the last year, Greyhound didn't put in a bid for buses because it was tightening up its schedules and redeploying its existing assets. We will this year be buying buses in Greyhound. So that changes entirely based on their appetite going forward. We're very successful in cascading buses in student, but I would point out the average age of buses hasn't gone up, so it's not like we're aging the fleet and taking big risks. But we signal that we expect capital to go up in students this year simply because we think retention rates will go up. So, you know, there's always going to be a bit of bouncing around, but we think the provision will always be in that range. As I said in my closing comments, it is about making sure you keep all these companies in a state of good repair, and that is our intention.
Moving on to the school bus savings, yeah, the vast majority of those savings were actually driven through a management restructure we did at the beginning of the year. So, those are effectively annual savings. We did them right at the beginning of the year. The numbers we've given you are the savings that have come through the P&L this year, and we would expect further savings from student. I mean, we are expecting that business to continue to grind out efficiencies as it makes more. It makes its processes more consistent and using benchmarking. We looked at the good work that's been done with maintenance. There are other opportunities to grind more savings out of that business. Maybe not as much as the $26 million we've done this year, but we'll continue to grind savings in that business.
And on transit, that improvement really comes from the basics. So you have a transit, you put in a transit contract, you make certain assumptions on driver availability, the amount of work you'll be allocated if it's a paratransit market where there might be three or four providers. And sometimes those assumptions are incorrect. And so through the course of the year, you not only are facing up to bringing in more drivers and making sure you tighten up the operation, you're also working with the client, and you're saying you either have to give us an adjustment here or you have to reallocate the work, and that's an iterative process. And as the transit management team just really came to grips with some of its more troublesome contracts that maybe were generating LDs in the first half of the year, they were able to deliver those efficiencies and deliver greater health to the portfolio. So it's really just basic blocking and tackling. There isn't any kind of silver bullet, or there isn't any, you know, game to be played, or there wasn't one contract that came in and changed it. It was about, you know, this drumbeat, which we do with them, you know, every month, going through every contract that has a troublesome margin and doing what's required to work it back up. No, I mean, we've always said, I said from when I first came into this business, transit's margin is a bit of a mystery when you just look at the low capital nature of the business, except for the fact that you can only have that margin, you can only survive in that business if you have a professional capability to be able to walk into what are relatively small contracts. I mean, these are like, most of them are $5 million, $6 million. Be able to size them up, figure out where you're going to get your 15 to 20%, put in a bid that you can deliver, and it's that capacity to be bidding all the time accurately that allows you to succeed. So we're always scratching our heads about the issue. Should we have a lower margin in transit to drive more growth and get a better return? But right now, we think we're in about the right place.
Morning, Jay Spina from Jefferies. When you look at the free cash flow generation over the last year, £147 million, can you give a sense of how that splits between the rail business and the remainder of the group? And I guess on that, you continue to bid for more rail franchises. What would flag to you that you've got enough exposure on rail as you move forward? And just finally, coming back to the point on demerger, presumably the long-term debt is a restriction on those options as well. Thank you.
So I'd take the point on the cash flow. I mean, we don't really get into sort of splitting the cash flow between the divisions. I mean, I'd say it was slightly higher than the profit in terms of the cash that's being generated from rail. I suppose I'll take the last comment on the demerger. You're right. You know, the bonds are a big factor in anyone's consideration. That's a agreed statement of fact. And on the second question, remind me of that one. Which was what was it?
I think
that one. Oh yeah.
I mean, our attitude is it's just about on making sure you stick to disciplined bidding and make sure each of these deals makes sense to you on their own terms. And if it does, you go forward. I mean, let's face it. There was a lot of skepticism about us as we lost bids, one after another after another. But we felt, you know, we could only bid what we knew we could deliver, and we had to stay there, and we had to, you know, deal with that skepticism about our performance. And we're just going forward with the approach we had before.
Thanks. Joel Koo from Liberum. Three questions. In Greyhound in Canada, you talked about impediments to turning the business around, structural impediments, I think you said. Please could you elaborate on that? Secondly, on rail capex, you talked about being funded. Could you just clarify, so on rail capex we may see a big gross number, but will it be offset within the year? And finally, on TransPennine, you talked about the revenue growth rate outperforming the industry. How is it tracking versus what you had in your bid, please?
Well, Greyhound Canada, I mean, the biggest structural impediment is the pension obligation we have there. So we have, I mean, no big grip mystery about it. We have to make sure that we don't trigger a liability in dealing with that issue. And we also have regulatory restraints on the way you can adjust service, and we have to work with the government in that regard. And so we're trying to balance all those pressures as we continually reduce the drag of Greyhound Canada on Greyhound U.S. And we think that we have plenty of opportunity to continue positive direction there. We think this becomes less and less of an issue over time.
On the rail funding, theoretically, any of the projects that are funded will either be paid directly by the authorities that are funding it, or it will be paid through the entire sort of bid mechanism, effectively, and it might be coming through CapEx, the CapEx line, or even through the working capital line, or sometimes through the sort of premium line. Theoretically, it should all sort of all equal out. You do get timing issues within that, but you know, the theory is it would even out.
On TPE, plainly, the current level of patronage in the whole rail industry is lower than people expected, and certainly lower than people expected when we made that bid. But it is performing better than the industry, and that bid is all based on the growth in that bid was all based on the new trains. So plainly, we sculpted the bid, including the cost profile, to not make any heroic assumptions about the first 2 years. So we still believe that what we're experiencing up there is indicating the pent-up demand that will be released as we introduce this capacity.
Morning, it's Alex Paterson from Investec. Could you just talk a bit about First Bus? And, I mean, clearly the restructuring has been going on for a number of years there. Could you say what else you can restructure and, you know, where you think the hanging fruit is now?
Well, I mean, you know, we confronted a division that we thought was in a difficult position. It was, its prices were on average about 6% above the industry, and in some places, even greater amount. The bus fleet had to be renewed, and we felt we had to bolster management. And so we did all those things. We changed the commercial offer. We've completed the recapitalization of the bus fleets so that it complies with the disability standards. And we have brought in a lot of new management. And lo and behold, as we pointed out in prior meetings, this really seemed to have a lot of impact. So for over 2 years, we went period to period generating growth in fare-paying passengers, and this company hadn't generated them in the prior decade. But the market has gotten much worse, and we haven't seen the growth we expected. So we've had to accelerate cost savings. I'm not proud to say, but it is a fact that in many cost categories, we still compare unfavorably with some of our competitors. So we still have a ways to go, even in the face of these difficult conditions. And one of the reasons why didn't we do more of that in the front end? Because as you make those changes, you're always risking cutting off possible growth. But given where we are now, you know, we have had to take stronger action in the past year. We have further plans going forward. But it is this difficult balance of not destroying the gearing you're going to get from the turnaround. And that's a trade-off we've been facing. But there are definitely costs, both front of house and in back office, that we think there are areas for savings in the future.
Okay.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.